Meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support and Outreach Issue held on the 30th of May, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, and Jeff, we already have you noted, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Sarah Bakke. Please begin.
Thank you. Yes, this is Sarah Bakke. Thank you all for joining us today. Staff could bring up the PowerPoint. That would be great. Today, we're going to be continuing our discussion, our RSP program, but we also wanted to do a brief topic review and touch on the progress that we made on a few of the topics and see if we need to potentially revisit any of these to get some additional information. And so before we get started, let's see if anyone has an update to their SOI. Not seeing any hands. Additionally, does anyone anticipate having anything that they would like to discuss during any other business at the end of the meeting? We should note. Not seeing any hands, I'll assume not. And so, as you can see with the agenda here, we're going to do a brief topic review, and then we're going to do some additional discussion on the RSP program. What we've noted is that we have, for about half of the I just lost track of my train of thought.
Topics?
No, that's not the word I wanted. anyway, we have some draft policy for some of the ideas or the concepts that we have for the RSU program, and then there's another handful of it that needs some further development. We don't have any potential draft policy language, thoughts, ideas. We have ideas, but we haven't sort of formulated it further. So that's what we're going to be looking at today is on the ones that we don't really have any sort of potential draft language put together yet. Seeing if we're there yet, maybe we still need to have some more discussions, take it back and think on it for a little bit. But that's what we're going to be doing today, and then we'll discuss any other business in our next meeting. So with that, I will turn it over to Krista to do our brief topic review.
Thanks, Sarah. It's Krista for the record. If we go to the third slide on topic review for applicant support, the idea here is kind of give an overview of where we are to date, what we've accomplished, and as well as kind of do a summary to determine whether or not we want to go back and revisit these items to kind of hash it out some more, and also for a planning perspective. So the applicant support purpose, I'm sure we don't need for me to read the top part. We've already gone through this a bunch of times. But for applicant support, we've really kind of put it on the back burner because of the difficulties or the hurdles to try to, I guess, decipher what the best way is forward. So we went back to look at all the materials and everything that we've discussed so far in all of our meetings. I just did a brief summary to date on there. And item A on this particular item is kind of a crossover from another topic on the use of excess funds. So I've just kind of put that in there because it was noted that it could be used for applicant support, whereas the other items, B to E, are all related specifically to applicant support discussions that we've had. So the question is, where do we want to go with this topic? And how do we want to proceed? And if we do want to proceed, then what other information would be helpful, if any? And any other thoughts or questions or any feedback anyone would have on this topic? Steve, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Chris. I didn't have anything. Oh, this is Steve Chan from staff. I didn't have anything specific on this topic. I just wanted to put a layer on top of this review of topics in that the public comment received from community comment 2 is, as for those that participate in the full working group call, that is being summarized by staff and organized. And so as you go through this or go through the topics and next steps, all the comments from CC2 will be able to be taken into account as you decide on next steps as well. So just want to make sure that there's the work track's aware that CC2 comments are also available and should be taken into account as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. So let's call this a preliminary, I guess, on it, on top of the CC2 comments. So is everyone okay with applicant support? Because we've kind of abandoned it. Are we okay abandoning it or not? Alan, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I don't think we can abandon it. I don't think we just don't have the discretion to do that. Now, if there's not enough interest within the people who attend this working group to have a substantive discussion, then we have to remand it back to the full PDP working group to either split off yet a different group that has focused interests or do it some other way. It's certainly not something that's going to die just because we haven't come up with a definitive plan. And yes, auction funds do come into this. It's not clear who would apply for them if and when we have a use of auction funds. It's also not clear what the timing of the auction fund availability will be compared to whatever the timing is of something going forward for us. So there's a lot of unknowns about it, but it's not just going to go away, and we can't just ignore it. So if we can't handle it and come up with good recommendations, then we have to simply say so and make it clear that it's got to be done some other way. Thank you.
Thanks. I know we really don't want it to die. I'm trying to get everyone to kind of give some opinions here. And just to clarify, I wasn't actually referring to auction funds. When we were talking about variable costs and other costing methods, we did say that if there was any excess going forward, that perhaps those excess funds could be used for the applicant support. It was just an idea, and I just tied it in here.
That too, but auction funds have been mentioned as a potential source. So,
yeah. Thanks.
This is Jeff. Can I? Sorry, I'm only on audio. Can I jump in the queue at some point?
Sure. Do you want to go ahead now? And then, Greg, I'll have you right after Jeff. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I'm in the car. Question, do we know exactly which elements, for those that applied for applicant support, and I guess I'm asking staff, do we have the reasons or which elements they failed on or they did not pass? Without, obviously, some of that information is private or confidential. We don't necessarily want to know who. But if there was one or two elements that were particularly difficult to meet, maybe we could work on those elements to improve them. We just don't have that information. Or I just can't remember that information. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I think yours need to turn. I don't think there were anyone, or I don't think there was anyone who actually applied, but maybe somebody could verify that for me. I think it was mostly due to the timing of it, but hopefully somebody else can chime in on that. Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. First, I agree with Alan regarding the procedural posture with which we approach this question or any other question, and it's probably a variation of Newman's rule, which is that the next rounds or whatever will move along the way things moved along unless we find reasons to change them. This is something that, in fact, is probably broken. And does need fixing. I think we'd have to just to have a affirmative justification for either abandoning it or changing it. I think there's ample justification for changing it, at least somewhat. Of course, we don't know if the timing had been better, would there have been better results in terms of applicant support. But the program itself, you know, I think needs to be reviewed. And the question of whether it's just involves throwing money at a problem or whether it involves non-financial support is key. Clearly, there are a lot of imbalances in this world, and the hope is that the GTLD population will move in a way that might more closely reflect the world's population and not the socioeconomic distribution of the world's population as it may currently do. And I think an applicant support system is critical to that. So either, you know, we can get into that or we can throw it back to the plenary and have a different group put together to do that and just that. But one way or the other, we need to figure out how to fix this or come to an affirmative decision that's somehow unfixable. As to auction proceeds, there's obviously a separate group that will decide how to do the auction proceeds. At best, we could make recommendations about how this group should interface with that group, in that regard, and perhaps even make some sort of formal application, if you will, for auction proceeds to be used in that way, but it's early days for that group, so it's hard to know how we can work with them. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Alan, is that an old hand or a new hand?
That is a new hand. To summarize the program, there were only three applicants. Remember, the program was created very late, was by most evaluations very poorly advertised. There were three applicants. All of them were exceedingly major ICANN insiders. Only one of the three passed the evaluation. One of them failed all four criteria. I put a link in the chat to the report. One of them passed all four, one failed all four, and one passed two and failed two. But clearly it was not advertised in the wider world. And in terms of which criteria did people meet? Well, it depended. My personal belief is one of the applications was not a particularly strong application and deserved to fail, but that's a personal opinion. It's a mixed bag, and we did so many things wrong that you will almost have to start from scratch, I would think. Thank you. And as someone pointed out, we also have to look at non-financial support. We, again, did that in a relatively weak way and almost after the fact and purely voluntary, and it didn't work very well either. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, so it sounds like we'll do some more work on this. And then put it back on the schedule for us to discuss a little bit further with a little bit of an analysis or a look back on the ones who did apply and the timeline leading up to it.
This is Jeff.
Anyone else have any?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Jeff. Yep.
Sorry. I wish there was an easier way. There was also, we also need to look into, there were a number of companies, registries, that were asked whether they would put their name on a list to be contacted by anyone that needed support in applying for a top-level domain. So I did this when I was at my last employer, and we put ourselves on the list, but nobody ever contacted us. And so I don't know. I think ICANN thought, staff thought maybe it was just doing its job by putting this list together, but nothing ever happened with that. So I want to know if that was just the registry I worked for or whether that was common amongst everyone that volunteered. You know, I think we just need to talk to whoever within ICANN staff that sponsored that program. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Actually, I was another person who did volunteer for that program, and I didn't get any response either. It makes you feel a little bit better. Alan, I see you have your hand raised.
I do. Thanks, Jeff, for that. I suspected that was probably the general thing, although I did hear at one point some stories about people being contacted, but I really don't remember who they were or what the details are. Hopefully we're going to get some good words out of the CCT review when the final report is as to what kinds of support might be useful and how do we make contact with these people who don't know about us. And are certainly not the ones who go to our meetings. So I think we've got a lot of work to do. And just for the record, as one of the people who was heavily involved in the last design of the applicant support, you know, it's not for lack of work that we put into it, but it was done very, very late, and there was an overriding concern that this not be gamed. And that made it almost impossible for anyone to succeed. Thank you.
Thanks. Frank, please go ahead.
Thank you, and this is Trang. Just to respond to your questions, the implementation of the pro bono support program for the last round was that anyone who is a service provider that wanted to offer pro bono services, you know, provide certain information to ICANN.org, and then once we validate that information, it then gets posted onto a directory. The same goes for those seeking pro bono assistance. Once they would contact ICANN, once we verify the information, it would then get posted to a separate directory. ICANN.org did not blame matchmaker for the last round, meaning we did not try to match up people and try to determine which service provider would meet the needs of any particular person looking for pro bono services. I don't think that was sort of the design of the program last round. Having said that, you know, obviously, whatever recommendations that this group come out with as it relates to the applicant support program overall or the pro bono assistance program, you know, we are certainly happy to take a look at that and from an implementation perspective. Thank you.
This is Jeff. Can I just jump in the queue?
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Trang. I think speaking as, you know, for one of the providers that were on there, I don't think any of that was known by us. So there was no communication to us that I can recall that basically said, you are a service provider, look at this page every day and contact these people. I think something fell down there, so we need to certainly, if we do that again, and we view that ICANN should not play kind of a matchmaker, we should probably improve the communication so that both sides know who to get into contact with a little bit better. But thanks, Trang.
Noted, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay. I'll maybe go to the next topic out of time, but we will come back to that, and also note it for the communication aspect of things. So the next slide is on the applicant guidebook and whether or not it was the right mechanism. And to date, through our discussions, we had a few comments. One is to have it as a less historical or a policy approach and just cut back the background and put it in more appendices if people want to read about that. and secondly, a step-by-step version by the type of application. Wondering if we have any additional thoughts or items to consider or anything new that we want to come back to this topic on and think of, I guess, new ideas and insight. Silence. Anyone? Okay, seeing no hands, maybe I'll let that one sit and everyone can think on that one in time for the next meeting and whether or not we should, I guess, prioritize that just like we did or we will for applicant support. Moving to the next slide is topic review on the clarity of the application process. And kind of talked about it earlier today in the big working group on what we can do to avoid developing processes on an as-needed basis. And to date, we have four comments. One is on clarifying questions that the streamline the answer submissions and offer a apply to all applications checkbox. Secondly, insight into the clarifying questions that were asked and the general context. So I have a spelling error in there. Thirdly, context by category. Add the ability to add context for each section. And finally, knowledge database to improve the search capabilities and keywords. And that was one that was, I think, brought up three or four times in different manners, but I think that kind of sums it up. So is there anything or any thoughts or additions or items that anyone thinks that we should consider on the clarity of the application process? Or is this one kind of a priority B? Donna says, I think the AGB was good. I don't know of any other mechanism that would be a great improvement. Going back a topic. Anyone on application process and the clarity? Donna, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Hi, Krista. I thought I'd just give you a bit of a break there.
Thanks.
Just on the clarity of the application process, I mean, my personal sense with this is that the new GTLD program, as it played out, was a difficult vehicle. It was difficult to implement because of the so many moving parts of it. But I think at the end of the day, some good work was done. And I'm unless we change the policy significantly, or the process, or the manner by which this is done for the next round, I would hope that the clarity of the application process is actually much more favourable than it was last time because of the lessons learned from the last process. And Trang may have some views on this as well, but so long as we don't lose too much of the first, the 2012 round, then I think the clarity of the process should be better moving forward if we're just making kind of iterative changes to things rather than making substantive changes. So I guess that's just my personal view. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks, Donna. Trang, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. And Donna, thank you for that. And just to confirm what you said, I think that's right. I think as long as no substantive, policy changes are made and we can sort of expect at a high level the same processes as last round, there's incremental improvements that certainly can be made, but it wouldn't take as much work as if we were to just completely change everything upside down. Thank you.
Thanks, Trang. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jim Prendergast. I wouldn't necessarily say that if there are no policy changes, it'll get complicated. I think we just need to be you know, clear in the applicant guidebook and as, you know, get it finalized as much as possible if there are policy changes. So I wouldn't rule out the fact that the applicant guidebook would be worthless if there were policy changes. I just think that we need to do due diligence and, you know, being as clear as we possibly can in what those policy changes are versus the prior procedures in the 2012 round.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Anyone else have any comments? Kurt, I see that you added a text on applicant support, and I will have to read through it. And well, I'm just going to read through it quickly. On applicant support, I'm just late, but I should have notes. I think this group developed a set of policy principles guiding an applicant support implementation, i.e., one, applicant support should be about coaching and mentoring than financial support. Two, financial support could be awarded for the application fee and early registration fees, but be focused on making the registry self-sufficient. Three, the support program should be publicized as broadly as the program itself. And four, the program should take into account that applicants will be unsophisticated, and evaluation should be conducted with that understanding. We can knock this off out in a couple of hours after we have a simple set of principles. We can turn that over to ICANN to start implementation now for iteration and discussion with the community. Sorry about that. So I think we have some feedback there for the different topic reviews, and we will consider that moving forward. And now we kind of know some areas that we need to go back and revisit and spend some more time on and ask for assistance if we need it. We're going to jump into the RSP again. And Sarah, do you want to jump in and go with that one?
Sure. Thank you, Krista. This is Sarah Bakke again. So we are now on slide six. And for those of you who want to look at the live Google document, and I'll put it in the chat. And so as I said previously, we currently have proposed draft framework for the following principles. Efficiency and evaluation and pre-delegation by CAN applicants and RSPs must be improved. And RSP program should be designed in such a manner so it does not increase ICANN's liability. Applicants must have access to a list of registry service providers and a list of the functional areas that they have been pre-approved for, through the RSP program. Pre-approval of RSPs should be done in such a way as to take into account the capacity of such RSPs, the type of TLDs that they support, and the services they provide. And if an RSP program is the agreed upon solution, we should have different categories. Do we have different categories of providers? Pardon me stumbling over my tongue. So we do have some drafts. Proposed framework for those. We move on to slide seven. The following needs a draft proposed framework, and that is security and stability of GTLDs must not be negatively impacted and preferably improved. So far, our discussion and considerations have included the following: that applicants or applicants' provider must be able to demonstrate technical capability equal to or greater than the 2012 round of the new GTLD program. The evaluation of registry service provider should account for the number of TLDs it supports with respect to the five critical services it provides, being DNS, SRS, WHOIS, DNSSEC, and ESCRO. Service levels for registry service providers must be equal to or greater than the 2012 round of the new GTLD program. How do we avoid a race to the bottom by setting minimum criteria that RSPs need to meet that not exceed and or innovate? SLAs exceeded 27 times, SLAs were exceeded 27 times without triggering ELO. We need more information into why. And consideration for the 2012 RSP, who should receive some type of grandfathering in the accreditation program. So based off of this feedback, do we yet have any idea of a potential draft framework that we could create that would be groundwork or maybe potential policy related to the security and stability of the GTLDs? Anyone have any thoughts on this one? It's fine if you need time to think about it. We'll just move on to the next slide, but I want to give everyone a chance to raise their hand. Donna, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin from New Star. So I just have a general comment about, I read back through this document earlier today, and to me, I struggle with a few things in the way that we're kind of doing this. So we haven't decided that there should be an RSP program, and we certainly don't have any idea of what an RSP program would look like. We're trying to develop a document where the purpose is providing efficiencies within the application process. So at a high level, one of the things that we've previously discussed is a pre-approval process which is more related to new entrants than perhaps existing entrants or existing providers. We've got a new issue that's come up, and that relates to the SLAs exceeded 27 times, which is actually not correct. The SLAs were not exceeded 27 times. But I'd also note that the stats that we've recently been provided with are over a 3.5-year period, so they're not as damning as potentially they might seem to be, but we don't have level of granularity within those stats to really understand what the issue is. And if we could understand what the, you know, what the problems were, where the SLAs are apparently getting close to that Ebro threshold, or we've heard from ICANN that in some cases they have breached that, but ICANN have decided not to go forward with Ebro. But we need to understand what those breaches were and why they occurred. If they're systemic within an RSP, then there's definitely a problem that has to be dealt with. But it's difficult for ICANN to take action against an RSP because they don't have a contractual relationship with the RSP. They actually have the contractual relationship with the registry operator. We don't know whether ICANN has actually sent breach notices to the registry operators associated with what is supposed to be, you know, Ebro threshold levels of the RSP. So I'm finding it really hard to get this clear in my mind because the purpose of this conversation, as I understand it, is to try to understand how to provide efficiencies in the application process. So that's one thing that we're trying to deal with. As we move in, the discussion of the SLAs is relevant to the extent that we're trying to understand why they've occurred and whether there's anything we can do in the front end of the application process to mitigate against that. It's one of the early conversations we had within the full working group on this issue is that we're trying to provide efficiencies for the applicants, and one of the things we spoke about was, let the applicant go through the evaluation process. So basically, the financial and the other component that's not technical, and understanding that there are potential contention sets that have to be resolved and other potential objections coming from the GAC that could impact an applicant things like that. And it's not until they get through that evaluation process that they actually need to consider selecting an RSP or doing that technical component. And I think we've got agreement that there will be some, you know, some value in doing that. So your applicant goes through two steps, and once that evaluation part is done, then they can potentially select an RSP. So that means that that's one mechanism where the RSP itself might actually understand at a given point in time how many RSPs they're likely to be supporting at the end of the application process, because as it is at the moment, an RSP and an applicant alike don't actually know what the requirements are, if you can understand what I'm trying to say, and I understand it's a bit confusing without a whiteboard. But there's a number of different components to this, and it breaks down in the application process phases. So you have the application process, but then you have a delegation phase, and then you actually have an operational phase for where the applicant morphs into being a registry operator. And I think what we're talking about here in terms of the requirements of an RSP, they're kind of different in the different phases that we go through. So I'm trying to understand in my mind, do we need to solve all three elements of that in what we're doing here, or is the requirement that we need to satisfy for the, you know, the PDP working group itself only relate to the application phase of this, or whether, you know, it's the responsibility of the working group to tackle that kind of overarching security and stability issue as it relates to the RSP's ability to provide services for X number of TLDs or X number of domains under management, that kind of thing. So sorry for the long-windedness, and I know that we've been talking about this for a long time, but I'm struggling in the way that we're pulling this together, because I think it's not – I still don't think that we've really – understood what the problems are we're trying to solve, and I really do think there are some key phases in the process where the requirements might be different. So I think I've just probably confused everyone more than necessarily, and potentially myself, but you know, I do think there are key phases that we need to think about what the RSP requirements are, and I'd like to understand which of those phases are actually relevant to the PDP working group. Thanks. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Donna. That's very helpful, and I'm trying not to sneeze right now. I get to what you're saying, and I think maybe part of the problem is that we're trying to, or at least I am, trying to keep everything on the table, because I think everyone has raised very good points and valid points, and we know that depending on the RSP working group that's been put together, I don't even know if they're meeting yet. If, you know, once they start determining how they're proceeding, then we're trying to just sort of brainstorm and get ideas and think about what may or may not be a problem and come up with potential solutions if it goes forward. And so I understand that it's sort of probably not as structured as it should be in drilling down on the specifics enough, but I also am not sure that we're there yet. But you made excellent, valid points, and I appreciate that. So, Alan, I see your hand is raised. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and I agree. I think Donna's intervention was useful and perhaps pulled us back to make sure we're addressing the issues that are the critical ones right now. Now, this is an area that I have no real involvement in, other than looking at it as an exercise in system design, as it were. From the application process, we've clearly identified that we don't want service providers to have to go through an application process 30 times. That alone can be fixed probably in a lot easier way than designing an RSP program. We simply have to recognize the fact that some people will be the service provider for multiple applicants and make sure that we're covering it. Now, a simple tick box saying, yes, I've already gone through the process, doesn't cover the issue of are you large enough to handle the multiple TLDs and the overall volume, and that I think we do have to think about. I think we all agree, at least I from what I've heard, that an RSP program would be a good thing, and it makes sense. I tend to agree with Donna that I'm not sure it's what we have to solve, and if we can, independent of this PDP, come up with a way to have an RSP program and design it that it meets the criteria that we need it to meet, I think I'm happy. I'm not at all convinced it's part of our job, though. So thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Alan. This is Sarah Bakke again. Okay, so based off that, I'm just going to continue and go to the next slide. It doesn't seem like we need to put it together here. I'm sure staff have caught some notes regarding this, but I think we're good on this slide. I see some chat. Let me scroll back up. I have from Jeff, how do you analyze the financial business case without knowing the cost of the RSP? Rubens, ICANN staff mentioned that one of the reasons for not triggering EBORO was a lack of registrants to be protected. The TLD only has nic.tld. It's really not that useful to do a transition. Phil noted, great point, Donna. It's a question of the cart for the horse. For instance, we wouldn't need the O if the SLAs were raised. Rubens, Allen, there is currently an ongoing consensus call in work track for proposing technical evaluation to be as aggregated as feasible. But even if that doesn't cover previous rounds like the 2012 one, it at least would already cover next procedure. From Jim, the 27 times figure is one data point. Some others were presented by ICANN technical staff at the DNF symposium. I've only seen the presentation and not heard the audio, but the stats on page 23 are broader than the 27 times figured, and he provided a link. Alan noted to Rubens that he understood. Jeff noted, for the record, I think we have established a need for the program. We just need to take Donna's comments into account then we're moving forward. So based on that, I will go to page 8. Another principle that we have discussed was the evaluation and pre-delegation testing must be consistent, predictable, and to the extent possible, objective. We've discussed that multiple evaluations of the same registry service provider by different evaluators are or more or less diligent evaluators that lead to inconsistent evaluations results. My apologies. Multiple evaluations of the same registry service provider by different evaluators, more or less diligent evaluators, that led to inconsistent evaluation results despite presenting the same technical registry solution. So this goes to what we had said previously, and Donna noted about not having to, I think maybe it was an Allen. not having to go through the same process over and over again. Based off our previous discussions, does anyone have any thoughts regarding a potential framework, additional information that we want to consider, or put this on hold until we have additional information going forward that we can't really build on this any further at this moment? Okay, not hearing anything. I see a note from Jeff, whether it's a program or just a pre-approved process. We've had a large number of calls on the benefits of this type of program process, whatever we want to call it. And Cheryl has noted to hold off for more information. Thank you, Cheryl. Okay, going on to the next slide, as I see no further hands. Another principle that we discussed was the cost associated with the evaluation and testing of an RSP should be borne by the RSP as opposed to the applicant, where the applicant and the RSP are not the same entity. And our previous discussions and considerations were that new RSPs not approved through the 2012 process would be, sorry, that word is blocked out on my screen, would be afforded the opportunity to become pre-certified at their own cost up to a given date before the commencement of the new GTLD process. And that was noted from Donna. In essence, ICANN application costs should be declined, and the accreditation costs to RSP should be recovered from the RSP's applicants. And then another note here regarding SLAs being exceeded, 32 out of 37. So again, this is another one of the principles that we didn't really have a proposed draft framework. It may be that we still need to hold off on this, and that's why there's no draft language yet. We may need additional information before we can make any kind of determination here. And I see a note from Donna in the chat at Jeff. Perhaps it's the terminology that you are using that we're sensitive to. I think we agree there would be benefit in enabling new entrants undergoing an approval process prior to the next application window. Okay, give anyone a chance to raise their hand. I see Phil is typing in the chat. It would seem like we need to hold off on this one. We're not giving any input. Okay, I will go on to the next one. And if someone gets an idea, we can always go back. Another principle that we had discussed previously that did not have any proposed draft framework associated with it in that Google Doc was that RSPs must be able to innovate and differentiate themselves. And so the discussions and considerations included concern on homogenizing services that the backend registry providers are able to provide, base registry agreement that applies to all the registry operators sets the core standard, should leave plenty of room for innovation and competition, and significant risk that innovation and differentiation is stifled through a prescriptive RSP program. So based off this feedback, do we have any other additional thoughts, potential draft framework? The one's gotten really, really quiet. So I'm assuming we need to hold off or we need more information prior to knowing on this further. Okay, we'll go to the next slide then. Another principle that we've discussed was that the RSPs must be able to innovate and differentiate themselves. discussions and considerations have, whoops, it didn't go forward, did it? Do I have the same one twice? No. There we go. Sorry about that. All right. So, additional principle was, applicants must not be required to select a pre-approved RSP, but shall be able to either propose providing its own registered service or select a new RSP. If that occurs, such new RSP must be evaluated prior to the ultimate selection of the applicant to manage one or more specific TLDs. So the considerations and discussions so far have just been that the applicant must not be prohibited from serving as its own RSP provider. So I don't know that we have any additional thoughts or information on the potential draft framework that we'd like to put forward based on this principle. I see a few people that are typing in the chat. Trang, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Trang. For the record, I have a question about this slide. If this were to occur, meaning if an applicant is also proposing to be its own registry service provider, the back-end registry service provider, would the evaluation of it as an RSP occur after the application window, or before the general application windows? Because obviously, that if it's after, then that might cause a delay to the processing of the application. Or must it qualify itself as an RSP prior to the opening of the application window before it can then submit an application and then pick itself as the RSP? So some clarification around that will be helpful. I don't know if at this point in time or if, you know, later as the concept gets fleshed out a bit more, but that would be an implementation type of question that I would have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Trang. Yeah, that's an excellent question, and I see that Rubens noted that he said, Trang, I believe we should allow before or during, but not after. But then again, as you noted, this is something we could flesh out further as we get closer to it. Rubens has also noted that this was the topic of some CC2 comments that we need to take into account. Yes, there's going to be a lot of information that was probably provided in the CC2 comments that we've not yet had a chance to dig through. So that may also give us some insight and information that we're needing in order to move forward with some of these concepts. I see Cheryl agrees. Okay, we go to the next slide. Final principle that we had discussed was how do we solve the issue of changing from one service provider to another service provider? And there was a note that the registry stakeholder group is discussing this in parallel, and the relevant information should be captured. So this is still very much open, and we'll need discussion at some point down the road. Donna, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin from Newstar. This is actually one that I think is beyond the scope of this of the PVP working group because it's a current issue, a current problem that's being dealt with. So I don't know that it actually is a problem that should be sitting within this PDP working group to resolve. But obviously that's a new staff position, not necessarily a position of this group.
Great, thank you, and we'll make note of that. All right, being conscious of the time, I see that we are 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Does anyone have any other business that they would like to discuss? As you can see, our next meeting will be held on Tuesday, June 12th at 3 UTC. So for some of those those of us that are on the East Coast of the U.S., that'll be on Monday evening, but for a majority of folks, it would be either in the morning or, unfortunately, for some, it's going to be in the middle of the night, and I apologize. Based on that, Krista, do you have anything else that you'd like to add before we end this call?
I would just encourage everyone to go back and review the Google Doc and please add any comments that would be helpful.
Great, thank you. Yes, as much feedback as you can provide, it's always very helpful. And we'll get to reviewing the CCC comments as well and start incorporating some of that information in making notes. So with that, I will go ahead and do the recording. Thank you all again for joining us. We do appreciate your participation.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.